Okay, today's daf is Baba Basra, daf in the Nile. Today's shir is sponsored by Gordon Weingarten in honor of the yard site of his father, his Ravram ben Asher Pinchas, the Meshamish Rav and Aliyah, and we thank Gordon Weingarten very much for the sponsorship. So we are holding on the bottom of daf Nun Amid Beis. We are at the word Gufa, two lines from the bottom of Nun Amid Beis. Today we're going to primarily focus, whereas yesterday we've been focused on a husband's ability or inability to have a chazaka b'nichsei ishto in his wife's nechassim, because after all, the fact that he's eating from his wife's nechassim, that he's living in his wife's nechassim, is only because he's allowed to have the peiros of the nichsei malug. That's not a raya that he's the owner. So today we're going to flip that around and talk mostly about a wife's ability or inability to have a chazaka in the nechassim of her husband. And we're going to discuss that the Mishnah says that an isha has no chazaka in the husband's property, but we're going to discuss what about a raya? Can she have a raya if she has a shtar that says that he had sold her the property? Is that going to be something that we're going to trust? The Gemara is then going to have two different explanations for a statement of Rav Hamnuna, where Rav Hamnuna says that a shtar mecher can be kona even if no money has been given over. That's something, not just shtar matana, a shtar that's written in a lashon of sale of a mecher can work as a kinyan even before money has changed hands. So the Gemara is going to have two explanations of why that would be so, or what he might have meant by that. Then we're going to discuss, when do we assume that the husband, when he sells something to his wife, isn't really trying to sell something, he's just trying to uncover money that she may have hidden away. So he's going to say, oh look, I'm selling this to you, and then she'll come up with money and he'll see where she has hidden all the money. And when do we assume he's trying to do that? Is it by a sale that we assume he's trying to do that? Maybe when he tries to borrow money from her, we assume that's all he's really trying to do. He's just trying to uncover the money that she might have. And then on Ambez, we're going to discuss when his husband sells a field to his wife, whether she's kona or not kona, meaning, do we say Lugli Azuza Yudubai, he's just trying to uncover the money, but he doesn't really intend to sell anything to his wife? And if she is kona, does he get to eat the peros of that field? Or do we say that no, he really means to give it as a matana, and a matana is ba'ayin yafa, is given with the most, in the most generous spirit, so he doesn't plan on being able to eat the peros of that field? So that's going to be the further discussion on Nun Aleph Amud Beis. Let's begin Nun Amud Beis, two lines from the bottom of the page, Gufa. Over here, we're still within the discussion of a husband not having chazaka b'nichsei ishto. So Gufa, Amar Rav, ein machzikin b'nichsei eshes ish. Rav held that a person cannot develop a chazaka in the nechassim that belong to an eshes ish, because the woman is never going to make a macha'a. Why should she make a macha'a? She assumes that's what she has a husband for, that her husband will speak up for her. And therefore, the fact that you have a chazaka in her property does not count as a chazaka, because chazaka is only good insofar as someone is going to be able to make a macha'a. But if the woman's not going to make a macha'a, then you have no chazaka. V'dayane gola amru machzikin. But the dayane gola said that one can have a chazaka in the nechassim of an eshes ish. Who are the dayane gola? So the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin goes through, whenever you have certain titles for people in Shas, it identifies those people by the titles. So the Rashbam reminds us that in Sanhedrin, Yud Zayin and Beis, the Dayane Gola are identified as Shmuel and Karna. So Shmuel and Karna hold that you can be Machzik and Nichsei Eshes Ish. Omer Rav, Halacha K'dayane Gola. So Rav says, I paskin like the Dayane Gola, that one can be Machzik B'Nichsei Eshes Ish. Omer Le Rav Kadir Rav Asi the Rav, Hadr be mar mishmaite. Did you change your mind? Meaning, this was a machlokas between Rav and the Dayane Gola, and now Rav is saying, I don't paskin like Rav, I paskin like the Dayane Gola. But you are Rav. Did you change your mind from what you originally said when you said ein machzikim minichsei shesish? So I'm a little mistavra amri kidder Rav Yosef. Now, what I meant to say when I say we paskin like the Dayane Gola, I meant in the situation like Rav Yosef had identified toward the end of yesterday's daf. What does that mean? So Rashbam explains, Mistavra mihechadavya miktsas chazaka bechaye baila vishalosh la'achar misas baila. When do you have a chazaka b'nichse eshes ish? If the chazaka started while the husband was alive, then the husband died, and you have a full 3 years of living in that property, of taking control of that property, after the husband has died, Kemosha Pirish Rav Yosef Lael, just like we ended yesterday's daf with Rav Yosef's explanation. Hasamu de Mistaver de Machzikin. That's where it's Mistaver that one has a chazaka. The Rav Gufeyach Kamalel, Ashes is Srichalimchos de Mashman de Machzikin. After all, that was Rav himself who said that in such a circumstance, an Ashes ish would need to make a macha'a, because apparently there is a chazaka. Omiu Dayanigola Bechalinin Pligia de Rav. But the Dayanigola disagree with Rav. They think that there's always a chazaka benichse Ashes ish, even if the husband's still alive. Rav doesn't go that far. Rav says, no, there's a chazaka b'nichse eishas ish in the sense that if the chazaka started while she was an eishas ish and then continued for 3 full years after the husband died, that's where a chazaka is going to be meaningful. Now, when the Gemara says that Rav responds, mistavra amri k'drav Yosef, that I only say that there's a chazaka b'nichse eishas ish, like Rav Yosef explains, there's no way that Rav was quoting Rav Yosef, because Rav was a, may have been a Tana, Rav Tanu Upalik, but he was not a Navi. So there's no way that he could have been quoting Rav Yosef, who lived generations after Rav. So that's what the Rashbam points out, that is the Gemara adding that in, Kidrav Yosef. It's the Gemara writing in shorthand, that Rav was explaining that I hold that there is a chazaka only for 3 years after the husband has died, but that's it. That happens to be exactly what Rav Yosef said in a later generation. So the Gemara just writes it shorthand that Rav said, you know, the same way Rav Yosef. Gemara usha kitzer divrei Rav. Aval Rav lo hizkir Rav Yosef, says the Rashbam. There's no way Rav mentioned Rav Yosef. Sharei kadam lo Rav harbe doros, because Rav lived many generations before Rav Yosef. So obviously he was not quoting him. Okay, now we move on to the primary topic that's definitely going to take us the rest of the daf. Velo li isha bin nichsei baila, that a woman does not have a chazaka in her husband's nechasim either. So Gemara says, pshita, of course not. Kivin de isla mezone, mezone yiduka achla. She's entitled to mezonos from her husband's property, so obviously the fact that she's enjoying and benefiting from her husband's property is that. It's the mezonos. It's not that she owns it. So Gemara says, lo tzricha diichila arachriti lemezona. Now there's a big chiddush over here, because we could be talking about that there's another land that's been designated to feed her the mezonos, to give her the mezonos. So if that's the case, it's quite a chiddush that we assume that whatever she's been enjoying from this property is also the mezonos. What happened to the other property? But still we assume that she doesn't have a chazaka b'nichsei baila. The Tzlach and the Pnei Shlomo ask, according to Rav, who's going to say on Amud Beis, that even when a husband sells a field to his wife, she is kona, and the husband continues to eat the peiros, so it turned out there's no raya from achilas peiros, because even if she was kona, she doesn't get the zchus of achilas peiros. So meaning, what are we saying over here? The woman doesn't have a chazaka b'nichsei baila if she's been doing what? She's been eating the peiros of the field. What's she trying to claim? That she owns the field? If you do own the field, why are you eating the peiros? Rav is going to say on Amud Beis that if the husband actually sold the field to his wife, she may own the field, but she doesn't get the peiros. So her eating peiros doesn't really help her in terms of having a chazaka. I mean, forget about that. There's another field for the mezonos. Okay, we reject that as a proof of anything. But her eating of the peiros is not a proof of anything either. So what's the chiddush that when he was miyachid her ara achriti lemezonos? Anyway, she has no proof from the fact that she's eating peiros. So Tzach suggests that the Gemara means to say that this exact halach, that a woman has no chazaka b'nichsei baila, even if he's miyachid ara achrita lemezona, it's being mechadish that in even a woman who's kona field mi baila, the baal is still ochel peros, and that's the reason that ein li isha chazaka, meaning that's cool for the point. That's the exact explanation as to why a woman has no chazaka b'nichsei baila. Meaning l'chora, this idea that, oh, but there's another field that's giving her mezonos, what's she doing in this field is a good taina. How come it's, oh, we would have thought that the fact that there's another field matters? Why doesn't it matter? There's another field giving her mezonos. Why should we assume this field is also giving her mezonos? She's already getting her mezonos somewhere else. So says the Tzach, no, the Gemara's whole point is, you're right, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that if she's already getting mezonos from somewhere else, that she should be getting it from this field either. But afal pikein, it's not a chazaka, because her whole taina is, I bought this field from my husband. Well, if you did, you have no rights to the mezonos. We're going to learn in Amud Beis that Rav holds when a husband sells a field to his wife, he still eats the payroll. peros. He still eats the peros from the field, so she has no raya from the fact that she's eating the peros. That's really the kamash malan over here. That's really the maskana over here. So says Gemara now, we had said that a woman has no chazaka b'nichse baila, but the same diuk we made on the other side, we're going to make now. Haraya yesh. That implies that if she were somehow able to prove that the field is hers, she has edim, she has a shtar, she has something that says that she has purchased the field, so that would suffice. That would, in fact, entitle her to the field. Ask the Gemara why. Why does that entitle her to the field? Maybe even if there is a shtar or edim that says that the husband sold her the field, maybe he can taina, I wasn't really intending to sell her the field, I was just trying to uncover whatever money she has hidden away. I was suspicious that she has taken some of my money and hidden it somewhere, because Kamash Kansi Shekana Baila, so he's entitled to all of her money, so I wanted to know where the money was hidden, so I pretended to sell her the field so that she will take out the money. But I didn't really intend to sell her the field. So from the fact that we say that she does have a raya, that she can be the owner of the field, we see from there that if someone sells the field to his wife, she is Kona, and we don't assume that all he's trying to do is just uncover whatever hidden money she might have. So that seems to be the muchach from our Mishnah. When the Mishnah says a woman doesn't have chazaka b'nichse baila, but it implies if she's able to prove that she bought the field, that would work. So apparently he cannot claim that he was just trying to uncover her hidden money. So says Merlo, Ema haray yesh b'shtar matana. Maybe in Echnami, if what she produces is a shtar mecher that says that she bought the field from the husband could say that was all a joke. That was just to try to get her to show the money. The only raya she can bring that will be effective, that will show that she's in fact the owner of the field, is if she has a shtar matana, because a shtar matana doesn't uncover any money. There's no reason why she would have a shtar matana other than the fact that the husband actually gave her the field as a matana. Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Huna lo hava mar gabon b'urta b'tchuma darmin mili malisa. Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, you know, when we took attendance last night, we noticed you weren't in the Beis Medrash. We were saying some really gishmak chidushim in the Beis Medrash. What do we call the Beis Medrash? The tchum. The tchum is referred to as the Beis Medrash. Says Rashbam, why is tchum means a border? What does it have to do? A boundary? What does it have to do with the Beis Medrash? Bate midrash shalom b'sofa tchum hayu k'dei shiuchu lova shom b'shabit min hayaro shom yisabit. The Beis Medrash was always just outside of the city. It wasn't inside the city, but it was still within the tchum. It was right at the edge of the tchum, so that everyone from the city can come to learn on Shabbos. So that's where the Beis Medrash was typically located. That's why they would refer to it as the tchum. So he said, you should know, Rav Huna, last night we were saying some wonderful chidushim by the Beis Medrash. So Amalei, my mili mali samrisu. What kinds of great chidushim were you saying? Well, here's a chidush. Hamocher sadol. If a man sells a field to his wife, Kansa, she's kona the field, and we don't assume all he was trying to do was get her to reveal where the money was. Amle Pshita, so he says, of course that we're not going to assume that that it was all a joke and that he was just trying to uncover the money. Of course we're going to assume that she's really kona the field, because Dal Zuze Mehacha, even if you forget about the money, pretend the money doesn't exist, v'tikni b'shtara, she would still be kona with a shtar. So just the shtar alone is enough to make the kinyan bichal. Milo tanan, don't we learn in the Mishnah after all, nechasim sheish namachayis niknin b'kesef u'b'shtar u'b'chazaka, that if you want to be kona a field, all you need is a shtar. So forget about the money. Of course she's kona. She has a shtar, says the Rashbam, but maybe she has the shtar because the only way for him to get her to show him where the money is if he writes a shtar that he's selling her the field. So Rashbam writes in the last three skinny lines, V'halleka lememar di lokas l'shtar lo v'yavazuzay. You can't say that had he not written the shtar, she would not have given him the money, l'gli yazuzay niskavit, and therefore all he was really trying to do was to get her to show the money, gam b'ksivas hashtar d'kol kach lo masakin shadayte. That planned out, that cheshbon, the person is generally not. Person will say, oh, honey, I'd like to sell you my field and see if she takes out money. But to hire a sofer and to write a shtar, that much he's not going to go just to see if she's hiding some money under the mattress or something. That much he's not going to do. So the very fact that there's a shtar is all you need to show that this mecher is serious, that there's a real mecher that took place over here. So Amar Lei, so he said back to him, no. V'lavit mar Allah, Amar Shmuel l'shonel b'shtar matana, av b'shtar mecha lo kana et shitin lo demeha. It's true that a shtar can work as a form of kinyan on karka, but that's only if it's a shtar matana. But if it's a shtar mecher, if the shtar is supposed to be proof of sale, so that only works when there was a money that changed hands. Without money that changed hands, a shtar mecher is ineffective. What the Gemara seems to be highlighting is the two types of shtaros that we have. We have what's called a shtar kinyan and a shtar raya. Sometimes a shtar works to affect the kinyan, to make the kinyan be chal, to make it happen, and sometimes the shtar is just there as a raya that the kinyan took place. But the shtar is not the kinyan itself. And what the Gemara is suggesting is, when you have a shtar matana on karka, so yes, the shtar is what makes the kinyan on karka. But when you have a shtar mecher on karka, the shtar is not what makes the kinyan. By a shtar mecher, it's the money that makes the kinyan. It's the kesef that's making the kinyan. The shtar is just there to prove that a kinyan was chal. You have a similar idea, not just by shtaros, the idea that something can sometimes make something happen and sometimes just serves as proof that it did happen. You have such a thing by edus as well. You have what we call edus l'kiyum adavar and edus l'birur adavar. Most of the time they have edus, the edim are there to let us know what happened, to let us know exactly how the events unfolded. Did Reuven kill Shimon? Did this one borrow money from that one? So edim are a high level of proof. But every once in a while, specifically by davar sheva erva, by gittin and kiddushin, you have what we call edus l'kiyum adavar. The witnesses at a wedding are not there to verify that a wedding took place. You could, the husband and the wife could both be moda that a wedding took place. How does baldin kimei edim, right? No, it doesn't work unless you have edim, because the wedding only happens because of edim, not because they're verifying that it happened. But the edim, the presence of the edim, is what makes it bichal. That's what we call edus l'kiyum adavar. You even have such a thing by a beisdin. Sometimes beisdin is there to be mevarer what the halacha is, and sometimes it's not about a psak halacha. You just need the Sanhedrin in order to give a certain koach to a certain action that it can't take place, to be mosif ali irva azaros. Not a psak. It's not a psak halacha. They ask a shayla, should we be mosif unto the city of Yerushalayim, unto the Kedusha of Yerushalayim? I will pass in this way. No, that's not a birur adavar. It's just that you need a Sanhedrin in order to make such a thing happen. But on the most fundamental level, it's by shtaros. That you have a shtar kiyum, you have a shtar raya and a shtar kinyan. So that's l'chora what the Gemara is saying. That a shtar on a mecher is a shtar raya. A shtar on a matana is a shtar kinyan. So don't tell me that the shtar alone is going to work to make the property belong to her. If it's a shtar mecher, no, you need the money in order for the kinyan to actually work. So says Gemara, v'lav mosif Rav Hamnuna Bishtar Ketzar, but didn't Rav Hamnuna already ask on that? That when we try to specify exactly how does it work to transact the property through shtar, Kosovlo alaniyar olacheres, and we explain if you write on a piece of paper or on a shard of pottery, afal pi shein bo shavar pruta, even though the paper itself is worthless, it's worth less than a shavar pruta, but you write the following, sadai mechuralach, I am selling you my field, or sadai knuyalach, or I'm giving it to you, harezu mechura nesuna, that works as a mechira nesina. So don't you see from there that the shtar itself affects the kinyan, even by a mechira, even though it's a shtar mecher? Sadai mechuralach means that it's a shtar mecher, and even without any money changing hands, you see that the shtar works as a shtar kinyan. So he says, no, when does a shtar mecher work as a shtar kinyan? When the guy is desperately trying to get rid of the land. So he's selling it because it's terrible land and he's trying to unload it on somebody. So then he wants the shtar to work as a shtar kinyan. He wants the land to not belong to him anymore as soon as the shtar is written. But normally, when you're selling a valuable piece of property that you would normally be very protective of, but someone has offered you an offer you can't refuse, well, you want to make sure that's for real. You want the money to affect the transaction. The shtar is only going to be a shtar raya on the transaction. So that's one explanation of why it is that Rav Hamnuna holds that a shtar mecher is kona, even if money hasn't changed hands, dafka when you were dealing with a bad land that a person's trying to unload. But typically a shtar mecher is not enough to make a kinyan. So then the Gemara is a second explanation of Rav Hamnuna. Rav Ashi Amar b'matana b'kesh litnalo. When a person writes a shtar mecher and he wants that shtar mecher to work as a shtar kinyan, that's not when he's actually selling something to her. If he's actually selling something to her, the money has to make the kinyan. He's really giving it to her as a matana. V'lama kasav lo b'loshem mecher. So why would you write a loshem mecher if you're giving it as a matana? Kedei liapos kochel. Sometimes you want the person who's getting the property to have the upper hand in any further disputes that may arise about this property. Someone's going to come and say, oh, this guy owed me money, that property should really belong to me. No, I bought it. I paid good money for this property, so if you want to confiscate this property for me, I better be reimbursed. But if I was just a recipient of a matana, so what? So then, you know, I don't need to be reimbursed. Easy come, easy go. So in order to be miyapa kocha, when you give a matana, you want the recipient of the matana to have the upper hand in any future disputes, you'll write it b'loshon mecher ki'ilu they had purchased the property, even though they didn't really purchase the property. That's the other explanation of what Rav Hamnuna meant, that a mecher is kona, even when no money, it wasn't really a mecher, it was a matana. That's why the shtar is kona, even when no money had changed hands. Now, a couple of things over here. First of all, Tosos, kasala al niyar o al acheres, says Tosos, uchein tana li'inyan kiddushin. We have such a notion by kiddushin, where you write a, if you're makadish nisha b'shtar, you could write on a piece of pottery that's worth less than a shav of pruta, harei mukdeshesli, or to the father bitchom mukdeshesli. So Amar Rabbeinu Tam dasi kravlaz damar edim esira karti. The Ramer kivin shesarach sheyachtem who edim b'shtar kiddushin. Because I'm parak beizik kiddushin. Amar Rabbeinu Tam to kiddush b'shtar shein elav edim. Ramer letamei damar edim chasima karti. Imkein lo mani chasima al davar sheyachol is dayev. So Tos says ha'ara over here that writing a shtar kiddushin on a piece of pottery is only going to work if you hold that edim esira. But if you hold Eide Chasima Karti, that the Eidim that are critical for the Kiddushin have to be signed on the Shtar, well then it has to be signed on a Shtar that is Lo Yochol Is Dayif, that is not forgeable. A piece of pottery, typically we assume, is forgeable, and therefore it would not work to sign on a piece of pottery. In the following Tosos, Afal Pishein Bo Shavapruta, so we identify this piece of pottery that you're writing the shtar on doesn't have to be worth any money. It could be worth less than the Shavapruta. Tosos points out Tema. Demai Rabusu who Shavapruta. What's the chiddush? That the shtar that I'm writing to you, that I sold you the field, the paper doesn't have to be worth a pruta? Why would you think it does have to be worth a pruta? See, by kiddushin, it's a chiddush. Bishlam ha-kabi kiddushin nakad kasvala niyar al-chair saf pishen bo shav pruta durabusahi, dafal pishen mekudeshes mitoris kesef, kivin shen bo shav pruta mekudesh mitoris shtar. See, by kiddushin, how does a normal transaction of kiddushin work? The husband gives the wife, the future wife, something that is worth a pruta, that's kiddush kesef. So the chiddush is, oh, but if you're being mekadesh with shtar, what you're giving to her doesn't even need to be worth a pruta because it's a shtar, it's not kesef. But by a sale, I don't have to, the seller doesn't have to give the buyer something that's worth a pruta. That never happens. That the seller gives the buyer something that's worth a pruta. So what's the chiddush? That the shtar that the seller gives the buyer doesn't have to be worth, of course it doesn't have to be worth a pruta. The money goes in the other direction. The buyer is the one that gives money to the seller. So what's the chiddush over here? Tosus asks. Tos points out, aval hacha gabe mocha, afili yesh vashav pruta in okonom bitoris kesef. Yeah, the shtar could be written on gold. It doesn't work midin kesef, because kesef doesn't work in that direction. Shoy mocha no si shtar, velo lokeach. The wrong guy is giving the money over if it was, if the shtar was worth something. Vein karka nikna agav kesef, and don't tell me it's a kinyan agav, that, because the lokeach is making a kinyan on the kesef, so through that kinyan on kesef, he's also kone karka. That's backwards. It doesn't work that way. There's such a thing as a kinyan agav that when you're kona karka, you're kona metaltel in agav the karka. But there's no such thing as being kona kesef and being kona karka agav the kesef. So Tosus is perplexed as to what the chiddush is over here that it's in Boshavar Pruta. This Tosus comes up in the oddest of all discussions. There was a while ago, there was on eBay, there was a guy who had was trying to auction off all of his mitzvahs. He no longer was observant, and he figured he did all these mitzvahs when he was younger. They're valuable to somebody. He doesn't care about them. So he was trying to auction them off to the highest bidder. So there's some halachic discussion going back centuries before eBay ever existed, whether a person that he wasn't the first one to come up with this chap that he could sell his zuchuyos. So there was a discussion in much earlier poskim whether a person is allowed to sell his averos, sell his mitzvos, these kinds of things. So the Marsham has a tshuva in Chel Gimel Sim Kuf Nun Aleph whether such a kinyan works. He says Hanoig Bedarkei Kinyanim. The way kinyanim normally work is that the kona gives money to the mocher for the object that he's buying. Over here, the mocher is giving the money for the agreement of the kona to become a balaveros. That the kona is saying, okay, I'm willing to take on your averos. So the mocher is paying someone to be able to take his averos. He says, it doesn't work because of our Tosfos. When you're selling something, the seller can't be the one that's giving the money. The buyer has to be the one that's giving the money. That's as far as what the Marsham was discussing, which was selling averos. But what about selling mitzvos, where the buyer is going to be the one to pay for the mitzvos? So that's a different situation. The Rama writes in Yerodeh Sim Reish Mem Vav that a person who's Mekayim a mitzvah or learned Torah is not able to sell his zechuyos to somebody else because the mitzvah and avera is only given. Is not nital nahavara. It cannot be passed on from one person to the other. And Rabbi Kiva Eger adds over there that when you sell your mitzvah, the guy who buys it doesn't get any schar, but you did lose your schar, meaning because you're mezalzel in the mitzvah to such an extent. Meaning when you declare to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that the mitzvah is so worthless to me that I don't care about it, I'm willing to sell it, so that's such a zilzel mitzvah that you lose out any of the benefit of the mitzvah. However, the Marsham writes, we do have a concept called Yisrael Arev Mezalzeh, so it could be that they're maskim in Hashemayim and the Kabbalah Sa'arvus on yourself as an Arev, that you're maskim to pay this chov to the person, and you have to worry that his averos are gonna be something that impacts your life. I mean that you have to be doeg on his averos, and that this is viewed as a statement that this is something that I'm genuinely going to be concerned about with his averos. The Netziv in Meshav Davar also has a tshuva about this in Chelek Gimel Simin Yodalid. And the Netziv writes that he goes through the whole idea of schar limud Torah, and that there's no way that you could sell the schar of limud Torah, because he says, what's the schar of limud Torah? That you're going to be yoshev and nena miziv ha-shechina, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to allow you b'mechitzaso to be nena miziv ha-shechina. That's the great schar of limud Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want someone who didn't learn Torah b'mechitzaso. So there's no way that you could just sell that right to somebody else. He's not appropriate to be b'mechitzaso HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's no way that's going to work. And he goes on to say, and it's also the whole thing is a Kenyan Dvarim, it has no mamashos, etc. He says it's as big of a joke as it sounds like. It's not something that could ever possibly work. But oddly, this Tosos comes up in that discussion. This Tosos is what the Marsham brings. Okay, says Gemara further. Meisvei, so the Gemara asks, Lovim in a Eved v'shichero. Let's say you borrow money from an Eved, and then you're Meshachar the Eved. Or mini isha v'girsha, you borrow money from your wife and then divorce the wife. Ein lahen alav klum, you do not owe them any money. My time, why don't you owe them any money? Lav mishum damrin l'gliyaz v'zeyu d'bayi. Isn't it because we assume that when you borrow the money, you weren't really intending to borrow money? You were just trying to uncover where they're hiding all the money. So the best way to uncover where they're hiding all the money is under the guise of a loan. Oh, I need to borrow the money. Then you see where they take it out from. But you aren't really being mechayiv yourself in the money. So it says, so don't you see that we have such a svar l'gliyaz v'zeyu d'bayi? So therefore, we're asking, shouldn't we say the same thing about about a husband who sold his property to his wife, that all he was trying to do was just trying to uncover where she has the money hidden. How come we said before that even though a wife has a she can bring a raya that she owns the property that used to belong to her husband, that's only with a shtar matana? But a shtar mecher, it's not going to work. We assume just that even by a shtar mecher, it's going to work. And we don't assume lugliya zuzi yudbayi. Yet over here we say that lugliya zuzi yudbayi. So it says Marno, shiny awesome. And over there, it's clear he doesn't want to owe money to someone that he should be in a position of authority over. So it doesn't make any sense that one would borrow money from his wife, that one would borrow money from his eved. If you look at Tosos, Lovim and Eved V'Shichuro, Tosos says, you know, there's an unnecessary detail over here. That the whole point over here is you wouldn't want to owe money to your wife. You wouldn't want to owe money to your Eved. What difference does it make if you're Meshachar or Megarish? That Lechora has no bearing on the case whatsoever. It also says, Tema, the Mayra Busunak Veshichro, Vigirsha Pshita. That part is obvious. The Ein Lemelov Klum, Ba'odu Tachtav, Gamluk Shiotzne Ein Lemelov Klum. The transaction happened while they were still married, while he was still in Eved. And we said it wasn't really a transaction, that it wasn't really a loan. It didn't count as anything. He was just trying to uncover the money. So why would we assume that once the relationship is over, now that transaction retroactively is going to be chal? Obviously not. What's the chiddush of the Gemara? Now the havamina is that I don't want to be an evel lovel lishmelva so long as that's the nature of our relationship. Where the nature of the relationship is an amen adon, you're an eved, I would never want to owe you money. But maybe the point of borrowing this money was to make it such that once that's not the nature of our relationship anymore, it should then be chal, that I will actually owe you the money. So that's the chiddush, that since at the time of the initial transaction, the relationship was one of master and servant, so mele, it stays that way, that we assume that it's never going to become a serious transaction. Shalach Rav Huna Bar Avin. Rav Huna Bar Avin sent the following. Hamocher sadul ishto, kansa, ubalo chal perus. That if a man sells a field to his wife, the woman is kona the field, but the husband is permitted to eat the peros from that field. Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Avav, v'chol gadol ador amru b'matana bikesh litnula v'lama kasavla l'shomecher k'dei liapos es kocha. That no, really he was trying to give it to her as a matana, and therefore he should not be able to eat the peros. Because in general, when you're trying to give something as a matana, we assume it's ba'ayin yafi. You're giving a matana with as generous a spirit as possible, and therefore he shouldn't eat the peros. Why did he write it to her as a mecher if it's really a matana? Liapos is kochei. He's trying to give her the upper hand, but that's not the nature of the transaction. The transaction was really a matana. How can you say that when a guy sells a field to his wife that it's serious and that he really intends for her to be kona it? But didn't we say that when you borrow money from your wife, all you were trying to do is you're just trying to uncover where she has the money hidden, and we don't assume that it was serious, that you really wanted to go in debt to your wife? So it says, shiny asam, the no, but that's for the reason that we already explained, that the reason we assume that the loan is not a serious loan when you borrow money from your wife is because you would never want to create that kind of relationship with your wife where you owe her money. Amarav, Hamocher sadol ishto kansa v'abalo chal peros. So this was the statement of Rav that we referred to earlier when we were discussing on Amud Aleph that how a woman could ever have a chazaka, a proof that she owns property just from her eating the peros. Because Rav says over here, if you in fact sold the field to your wife, yes, she is the owner of the field, but you still get to eat the peros. So that's why in Amud Aleph we were discussing how she can try to prove that she's the owner by her eating the peros. That wouldn't even make sense. She wouldn't be eating the peros, according to Rav. The Baal is ochel the peros when he sells a field to his wife. But b'matana, But if you give it to her as a matana, she's cut of the field, but the Baal does not get to eat the peros. The Shittim Gvetzes quotes Rabbeinu Yohanan that by matana, since she's embarrassed, the woman would not be mefarish that she's makabel al manas that the husband won't be able to eat the peros. So mistama, you could say that the matana was al das that the Baal will not eat the peros. But by a mecher, where she paid for it, so there's no busha in paying for something. And therefore, if she didn't want the Baal to eat the peros, that should have been explicit in the shtar mecher. So by matana, she didn't want to put that into the shtar matana because it's a little embarrassing. She's getting a gift, so she's going to start negotiating the terms of a gift. You know, you don't want to do that. So we assume that it's automatic, that she doesn't have to say it because we don't want to force her to have to say it, that the husband's not going to be able to eat the peros. But if she's actually buying it, then if she doesn't want the husband to be able to eat the peros, she should have negotiated that into the contract itself. The fact that it's not in the contract means that the husband is still able to eat the peros. That is how the Shittim Gvetzes, the name Rabbeinu Yohanan, explains the difference. There are other explanations Rishon as well. That's how he explains the difference. Rabbi Lazar Omer, echad zeh ve'echad zeh konsa ve'en abal ochel peros. Both cases, both by a mecher and by a matana, the kinyan is chal, but the husband does not get to eat the peros. The woman, meaning the woman is kona entirely, even by a mecher, the woman is kona entirely to the extent that the husband will not be able to eat the peros. Avid Rav Chista Uvda Krabi Elazar. Rav Chista Pasan like Rav Lazar. In a case of a mecher, that the woman owned, the husband sold the field to the wife, the woman becomes the owner of the field, the husband has nothing. He does not get to eat the peros in the field. Amrle Rabban Ukva of Rabban Nechemia, b'nei binte de Rav. So Rabban Ukva and Rabban Nechemia, who were the grandchildren of Rav, the sons of the daughter of Rav, they said to Rav Chista, Rav Chista, Shavik mar Rav Raviva Avid Kazutri, look, we had a machlokas over here. Rav said that the husband does get to eat the peros. Rabbi Elazar said no. Come on, you're going to pass like Rabbi Elazar against Rav? How do you leave one of the Gedolei Ador aside for Rabbi Elazar, who's not quite, he's not Rav? So it doesn't make sense, because Rav was from a much earlier generation. As Rav Ravi, Rashbam points out, Rav Shekadon Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbo Shel Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Yochanan was Rabbi Elazar's Rebbe. Rav preceded Rabbi Yochanan. So don't tell me that you're going to pass like Rabbi Elazar against Rav. He says, what, you think we're only passing Rabbi Elazar? You think the only person that argues on Rav is Rabbi Elazar? No, we also have very big people that we're passing in like. Because Rabban said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, who, yeah, may have been a little younger than Rav, but they were Bar Pluktas, they were the same generation. That Echad Zeh Ve'Echad Zeh Konsa, Ve'ena Ba'alochel Peros. That in both cases, even in the case of a Mecher, the woman is Kona, but the husband does not get to eat the peros, even in the case of a mecher. So Amar Rava, Rava says, let's make a psak halach over here. Hilchasa hamocher sadal ishto. A man sells a field to his wife. Lo kansa, she does not own the field. Meaning, we assume that he wasn't serious about the sale. He was just trying to uncover some money. Vabalochel peros, and the husband still gets to eat the peros. Bimatana, if he gives it as a matana, kansa, that we assume he's serious. Ve'ena balochel peros, and the husband does not get to eat the peros. So says Gemara, that first sentence didn't make any sense. Tarti, obviously, if she is not Kona, then of course the Baal eats the peros. He owns the whole thing. He gets everything. So says Marlo Kasha. Kan b'mos t'munim, kan b'mos shein t'munim. Those are actually two different statements. When there's hidden money that he's trying to uncover, then we assume lo kansa, she's not kona, and he was just trying to uncover the money, and there's no kidding at all. And then, of course, obviously, he gets the whole field. The whole field still belongs to him. But when it's mos shein t'munim, when there's no money that we know of that might be hidden, or there's no money that he's suspicious of that might be hidden, then she is kona. But that's the part where we say, but still the Baal is ochel the peros. Still, the husband gets to eat the peros, even though she's kona the field. So says Gemara, Dam Rav Yehuda, Ma'us Tmunim, Lo Kansa, Ma'us Sheina Tmunim, Kansa. If it's Ma'us Tmunim, then she's not kona anything, because obviously he was just trying to find that money. But if there's no Ma'us Tmunim, then we assume that she is kona, because he was serious about selling the field. But even so, he still gets to eat the peros of that field, because we paskin like Rav and not like Rabbi Lazar. So Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up at the two dots at Tanur Rabbanu. Oh, yeah.